Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 37. My name is John. At least look at me when you shoot a bullet through my head. December 14th, 2012 is one of those days that makes you question humanity. All our posturing about our evolution, our ethics, our hubristic ethos means nothing when one person can walk into a school and slaughter 20 children and 6 adults, not including his mother, he also killed in a separate location. We sit open-mouthed as news reports from Sandy Hook Elementary School come in, and we try to comprehend what is incomprehensible to a sane mind. Many parents, after watching the news in their break rooms and hearing it on the radio in the evening rush hour, got home from work that day and held their children close. We are stunned, numbed, and at some point, maybe it's fleeting, maybe it lingers, the question pops into your mind, and you ask yourself, why would someone do something like that? It's chilling. It's demoralizing. It's sickening. And some people will come to the conclusion that this is it. We have officially hit rock bottom as a society because this is the worst thing that anyone has ever done. Or is it? July 20th, 2012. A maniac makes his way into an Aurora, Colorado theater for a midnight screening of The Dark Knight Rises. He sets off tear gas and shoots into the audience, killing 12. April 16th, 2007. A maniac student at Virginia Tech goes on a shooting spree, killing 32. April 20th, 1999, two maniac students walk into Columbine High School and begin shooting fellow students, killing 13. October 16th, 1991, a maniac crashes his pickup truck through the front window of a Luby's cafeteria in Killeen, Texas. He gets out of the truck and begins shooting, killing 23. My aunt and her friends were on their way to the restaurant when it happened. Luckily, they were just a couple of minutes late. August 1st, 1966. A maniac makes his way to the top of the clock tower at the University of Texas in Austin and begins shooting people in sniper fashion, killing 14. But guns aren't the only way horrific deaths shock us. 2,996 people are dead when airplanes are used as weapons on September 11, 2001. 168 people were killed in a domestic terrorist explosion in Oklahoma City on April 19, 1995. And maybe it's not something that happens instantaneously. Maybe it's done over years. Like the 33 people killed by John Wayne Gacy in Chicago from 1972 to 1978. You want to make your skin crawl? Read Journey into Darkness by John Douglas. It's a nonfiction book about criminal profiling where he goes into detail about how some of these sick bastards like Gacy did their killing. And all that's just in the past 50 years. If you start looking at history outside of your own lifetime, it becomes much clearer. This is nothing new to the human race. In January 1958, a 19-year-old maniac kills 11 people on a road trip with his 14-year-old girlfriend along for the ride. And did you hear about the 38 elementary school children and 6 adults that were killed? That was in Bath Township, Michigan, in 1927, with explosives. Explosives that the maniac had been secretly planting in the school for months. And that doesn't even begin to talk about the truly large-scale murder. Just a little over 50 years ago, the ruling Communist Party killed anywhere from 18 to 45 million people during the forced industrialization of China. 80 years ago, the Soviet Union killed anywhere from 1.8 to 7.5 million Ukrainians in the Holodomor, when the communist government took away their food and starved them to death. And atrocities with children? Don't get me started. Warlords in Africa are recruiting children into their armies as little more than cannon fodder? That would be an ironic blessing, because if they survive, they become willing participants in the atrocities. Ah, hell, why just pick on the African warlords? Pretty much every country in existence has the blood of children on its hands. If it's not through the annihilation of indigenous people, it's a purging of those considered inferior. One of my absolute favorite podcasts, other than this one, obviously, is Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. I cannot recommend his podcast enough. I was never a big history fan. I was tainted in the public education system by predominantly boring history classes. I would have had a lot better grades and been a lot better student if I could have listened to history the way Dan Carlin presents it. He just finished a series on the Mongol Khans, and he's done epic series on the fall of the Roman Republic and the Eastern Front in World War II. Any one of these will give you an entirely different perspective on the cruelty of humanity. This is nothing new. Small scale, large scale, senseless killing is nothing new. Cruelty to women and children, nothing new. Even cruelty with guns is nothing new. But we are short-term memory creatures. Or maybe society has the same mental defense mechanism as an individual has to forget traumatic experiences. But there's a fear now in America. Fear of Sandy Hook happening again. Nobody wants to face this tragedy again. But history will tell us that you can never predict when the Nutters will rear their ugly heads. Of course, that doesn't stop some people. Because in times like these, people want action. Do what has to be done to prevent a tragedy like this again. The problem is, there's not much thought in the matter. That is a dangerous prescription. The worst part is when the call for action circumvents not only thought, but common sense as well. We saw this 12 years ago, after the September 11th attacks. Acting without thinking and without regard to common sense got us the Patriot Act. I know. I was one of those people. Our fears got the better of us. And someone conveniently had the solution. All it took was for the citizens to turn over some of their freedoms to the government. Not wanting to let a tragedy go to waste, government once again is coming to us with their answer. All it will take is for us to turn over some more of our freedoms, our rights, to the government. In an amazing coincidence, Senator Dianne Feinstein announced they had gun control legislation they would produce in reaction to the Sandy Hook massacre. It's something that they had been working on anyway for the past year, according to the original news reports. Those of us who remember back when Saturday Night Live was worth watching, remember Dana Carvey's Church Lady skit. No, I'm not going to do an impression. But a collectivist senator prepares gun control legislation and jumps on her white horse to bring it down to the masses after a gun-related massacre. How convenient. And of course, the debate waged on in the media. There are clear sides. There are some who definitely want to ban guns altogether. And of course, these are almost exclusively collectivists. There are some who refuse to cede any kind of weapon to a government ban. There are also nuances along the way of people who are comfortable with some kind of ban. The severity of the ban usually coincides with the inexperience with firearms. And I'm sure you can figure out on which side most of the news networks took in the debate. And it didn't help that the most talked about debate within the media on the subject of gun control was Piers Morgan versus Alex Jones. Unlike a lot of people, I don't care much to watch train wrecks, especially scheduled train wrecks. I just couldn't get through it. It was like watching a debate between Dr. Strangelove and the crazy cat lady from The Simpsons. There is nothing worse for a cogent argument than for it to be delivered by someone as manic as Cosmo Kramer and likable as an angry drunk. I think I understand the fear. I've never had a gun pointed at me, though I have been threatened, and I didn't stick around long enough to find out if it would happen. I've never pointed a gun at someone. But the thought of losing a loved one to gun violence is terrifying. I would imagine even more so if that loved one is a child. Fear only wins when it controls us. If we let the fear take control and steer our lives, we lose. We are better off when we overcome fear. Certainly that's not an easy thing to do. Overcoming fear is a two-front war. The first front is inside us, our own self-doubt and our own imagination playing the worst-case scenario. The second front is all the fear-mongers who prey on your fears. They will provide a deluge of reminders of the fearful event and buttress your anxiety with more horrors that could happen. So someone watching the news of the Sandy Hook massacre is already experiencing their own inner war. What if that happened at my child's school? I wouldn't be there to protect them. There would only be a teacher and maybe a couple of other adults to stand in the way. But it wouldn't matter because there's a madman mowing down people just like in Connecticut. What would be a normal day at school would turn into chaos. First, loud banging noises and screaming from down the hall. Then panic as the teacher tries to find out what's going on. And then he's there, the maniac. My child sees the teacher fall with a gunshot. And the last thing he sees in this horrible moment is the maniac aiming at him and the flash of a gunshot. But that's not enough for the fearmongers. You then have to listen and see a parade of self-righteous attention whores remind you of what happened and tell you how not the person who pulled the trigger, but the tool that was used is responsible. The tool is what caused this massacre. The tool is what needs to be outlawed. The tool is scary. The tool is out of control. A couple of weeks ago, I was driving down a road at about 6 in the evening. I came across a traffic jam in a place that you don't normally see them. And there were emergency vehicles in the parking lot of a church. The next morning, I find out I had just missed the helicopter that was there as well. It turns out, a drunk 17-year-old driver hit and killed a 6-year-old boy. They had brought in the helicopter in a desperate attempt to get him to a hospital, but it was too late. Now, set aside that the teenager was drunk at all, much less around 6 p.m., notice I said it was the driver that killed the boy. By the logic of the fear-mongering, self-righteous attention whores, it is the car that killed the boy. No, the car was the tool. The blatantly irresponsible person driving the tool is at fault. There is no call to ban the automobile despite all the nut jobs behind the steering wheels that get on the road every day. And maybe that's why the fear-mongering, self-righteous attention whores don't call for a ban on cars. They will be seen driving them. It exposes their hypocrisy. Just like the reaction to the Hollywood people who did the anti-gun video. If you haven't seen it on YouTube, I think you should give it a look. It took the original video the actors and actresses made with their dour pleas for gun control and inserted clips of them from their movies shooting guns, killing people, and advocating firearms. It's pretty good. The other thing is these fear-mongering, self-righteous attention whores could very well have their own guns. And unlike vehicles, which are pretty easy to spot, a gun can be kept away in a house never to be seen by the outside. It's a hell of a lot easier to be a hypocrite if you think people won't find out. Of course, that doesn't work for everyone. It's really difficult to tell people that guns can't keep you safe when you're surrounded by armed Secret Service agents, but that hasn't stopped the president from trying to force that message down people's throats. Politicians in general have no problem with blatant hypocrisy, nor do they have a problem with pitting your freedoms against their agenda. I spent a lot of time in my Christian years doing a lot of busy work. You know what busy work is, right? Like when your teacher has other stuff to do, so she gives the class a meaningless assignment that she says is really important, but just so happens to keep everybody quiet for long periods of time while she gets her other work done. You know, like that. I can't believe how many countless vacation Bible schools, or harvest festivals, or Easter socials I participated in as part of community outreach. See, the congregations I belonged to thought if they just did something fun for families, then they'd grow their attendance. The new people coming to these events would see church as fun, so why not join and sit through sermons every Sunday? I don't know how much money they spent on these things, but it was a lot. I don't know how many hours people put in to bring all this stuff together, but it was a lot. And how many people were brought into the congregations? Zero. But you know what was said each time another one of these events was proposed and debated? If we just get one person into the church with this, then it will be worth it. Ugh. I guess none of the events were worth it. The reason why I mentioned that is because I want you to understand I have a rather unfavorable experience with the anything for the one argument. So it should come as no surprise when I run across a news report not long after the massacre that none other than Joe Biden used it to promote the administration's philosophy on gun control. Joe is on record quoting Obama, saying, "As the president said, if our actions result in only saving one life, they're worth taking." And what if the actions result in losing one life? Joe Biden, quoting Obama, says that if gun control saves one life, it's worth taking. But what if gun control ends up killing more than it saves? Sandy Hook Elementary School was a no-gun zone. There was a gun control law in place that prevented people from having guns in the school. Every law-abiding person at Sandy Hook took that law to heart and kept their guns out. Because of the existing gun control law, the school was left defenseless. Because the school was left defenseless, 26 people are now dead. Tell me, Mr. Vice President, if your actions result in ending 26 lives, is it worth taking? And I'm not talking about drone strikes either. Of course, the options on the other side aren't palatable either. The NRA proposed armed security in schools. Others have proposed arming the teachers themselves or designating existing employees as marshals, similar to sky marshals on airplanes. But can those people be trusted? Why not people who used to be in the military or in law enforcement? Maybe like Christopher Dornan, a former military and former police officer in California, who killed 3 people on a vendetta rampage. Quick aside. His actions are atrocious, and the killing unforgivable. That should be a given, but these days you gotta say it anyway. But I am more than inclined to believe him, that there is rampant corruption and cover-ups in the LAPD. But certainly some on the pro-gun control side would say this shows us that even ex-military and ex-police are not fully trustworthy. Additionally, just because guns are around doesn't mean you're safe. After all, military hero Chris Kyle was killed, along with Chad Littlefield, at a gun range. All those guns around, and that didn't stop 2 murders. So really, no one is ever safe. And the debate goes on. My question, why is there a debate at all? A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This is your right. You choose whether or not to exercise it. You're asleep. Best sleep you've had in a while. Maybe you're even in the middle of a really nice dream. A robber breaks into your house. You have to defend yourself. Is the robber armed? Does he have a knife? Does he have a gun? You don't know. But you damn well want to be better armed than he is. What if the threat is a foreign army? What if the threat is a government who has decided to round up certain groups of people they consider to be troublemakers? Oh, our government would never do something like that, right? Yeah. Just ask the Americans of German descent in World War I, or the Americans of Japanese descent in World War II, or the Americans of Arab descent post 9/11. And say, wasn't it just last podcast where I mentioned nutjob Harry Belafonte advocating the imprisonment of people who oppose Obama? You want to be better armed than whatever could come through your door. You choose how to arm yourself. You choose your defense. You don't want any weapons in your house? Mazel tov. But if you feel you need weapons on par with what the government may use, think Ruby Ridge, think Waco, then you have the right to procure those weapons no matter what anyone else may say. Because the citizens are in charge of the government, not the other way around. Barack and Michelle Obama are not our parents. We do not have to do what they tell us to do. We should never acquiesce to following an unjust law. The problem is we have been doing that for so long that we've forgotten our own rights. They tell us to surrender our gold. We give in. They tell us to surrender portions of our paycheck. We give in. They tell us to pay above market value for labor. We give in. They tell us to allow them access to our private conversation. We give in. They tell us to allow them access to our private medical history. We give in. They tell us to remain silent as they touch our bodies or take naked scans. We give in. They tell us they can spy or kill us with drones if they consider us a threat. We give in. And as we wake up and break away from the herd of sheep that follow their master's voice, it becomes more difficult for the collectivists to convince us of their good intentions. The problem with the puzzle of life is there's no picture to show you what the final outcome should be, and there's multiple ways of connecting the pieces. If you have a creative way of putting the pieces together, you may end up with a very frightening end. The Patriot Act was put together rather quickly. The speed at which the legislation was written and passed through Congress aided 9/11 truther conspiracies. Senator Feinstein's anti-gun legislation was in the works for a year before Sandy Hook. Just in the past 6 months, let's review the most shocking gun crimes. A crazy guy shoots up a movie theater. The message the collectivists try to convey, you're not safe from guns out in public. A crazy guy shoots up a school. The message the collectivists try to convey, your children are not safe. Won't someone please think of the children? A crazy guy shoots two veterans at a gun range. The message from the collectivists? See, even when there are other guns around, you're still not safe. A crazy guy shoots three on a vendetta rampage. The message from the collectivists? See, even former military and law enforcement can't be trusted. A picture could be painted stating that these horrors that have happened prove that only existing military and law enforcement should have guns. In other words, only the people in government ought to be allowed to have serious firepower. Only government should be allowed guns. All you peasants, you just keep a pair of scissors by your bed to protect yourself if someone sneaks in through a window. Why would the government want to be the only ones armed? By the way, You know, Homeland Security justified a purchase of 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition by saying it's for their agents to practice shooting. Are we a republic or an empire? Are we a nation that gives its freedoms over to a central planning government, or a nation that cherishes its natural freedoms and uses government only to protect those individual liberties? Are we people who are controlled by fear, or people who overcome fear? Are we defenseless people who pick up the phone and call government in the hopes that they will arrive in time? Or people who exercise our natural right to choose how best to defend ourselves? This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.